Welcome to Listen 2. This is Ted. The news was published on Thursday, October 10th. Joining us today are Eric and Kate. Let's dive right in. Today, we're discussing a habit long considered healthy that some longevity experts are now warning against. What's this habit, and why the change in perspective?
Well, Ted, the habit in question is consuming high amounts of animal-based protein. For years, we've been told that protein is crucial for muscle building and overall health. It's been drilled into us that we need to eat plenty of meat, eggs, and dairy to stay strong and healthy. But now it seems the tide might be turning.
That's right, Eric. Recent research suggests that excessive animal protein intake might actually be harmful to our longevity. It's quite a paradigm shift from what we've been taught for decades. We're finding out that sometimes too much of a good thing can be, well, not so good after all.
Hold on, Kate. Protein is essential for our bodies. The FDA recommends 50 grams daily as part of a 2,000-calorie diet. How can something so
fundamental be... I'm not saying protein itself is bad, Eric. The issue isn't protein itself, it's the overconsumption and the type of protein. Most Americans are eating about 100 grams daily, double the recommended amount.
But surely that extra protein is beneficial, especially for older adults who need more to maintain muscle mass. We've always been told to up our protein intake.
Not necessarily, Eric. While protein is important, the source matters. Plant-based proteins are healthier than animal-based ones. It's not just about quantity, but quality, too. We need to rethink our protein
sources. That's a bold claim, Kate. What evidence supports this? It seems like we're suddenly demonizing foods that have been staples in human diets for millennia. I'm not convinced we should be so quick to dismiss animal proteins.
Well, Eric, the evidence is pretty compelling. Research shows that animal proteins, especially when grilled, fried, or roasted, are high in harmful compounds called advanced glycation end products, or AGs. These aren't just some made-up boogeyman. They're real compounds with real effects on our bodies.
AGEs? That sounds like pseudoscience. What do these supposedly do? It's hard to believe that something
in our food could be so... It's not pseudoscience, Eric. AGEs can accumulate in tissues, leading to oxidative stress and inflammation, key drivers of cellular aging. They're not some mystical entity. They're well documented in scientific literature. This isn't about fear-mongering. It's about understanding how our food choices impact our health.
Interesting points from both of you. Eric, what's your take on this new perspective? Do you see any merit in Kate's arguments?
While I agree that balance is key in any diet, I'm skeptical of demonizing entire food groups. Protein from animal sources has been a staple of human diets for millennia. Our ancestors thrived on these foods. It seems premature to suddenly label them as harmful based on a few studies.
True. Our ancestors did eat animal proteins, but our modern diets often include excessive amounts. Did you know that 75% of Americans meet or exceed recommendations for meat, poultry, and eggs? That's a far cry from our ancestors' diets, which were much more varied and limited in animal protein.
That doesn't necessarily mean it's harmful. Correlation doesn't imply causation. Just because we eat more protein doesn't automatically
It's not just correlation, Eric. Another compound, trimethylamine N-oxide, or TMAO, is linked to increased cardiovascular disease risk. This isn't just about eating more or less of something. It's about understanding the complex ways our food choices affect
our health. Let's dive deeper into these compounds. How exactly do AGEs and TMAO affect our bodies? Can you break it down for our listeners?
Before we accept these claims, we need to consider the quality of the studies. How large were the sample sizes? Were they peer-reviewed? It's easy to cherry-pick data to support a hypothesis, but we need to look at the bigger picture. Science is all about rigorous methodology and replication.
I appreciate your skepticism, Eric, but these aren't fringe studies. Multiple peer-reviewed studies have shown that AGEs damage proteins, DNA, and cellular structures, accelerating aging and contributing to chronic diseases. We're talking about respected journals and large-scale studies here, not some random blog posts.
But our bodies have mechanisms to deal with cellular damage. Isn't this just part of normal metabolism? We've evolved to process animal proteins. It seems unlikely that they'd suddenly become
toxic. To an extent, yes, our bodies can handle some cellular damage. But excessive consumption overwhelms these mechanisms. TMAO, for instance, promotes cholesterol accumulation in arteries. It's like constantly overloading a system. Eventually, it
Couldn't other lifestyle factors be at play here? Diet isn't the only determinant of health and longevity. What about exercise, stress levels, environmental factors? It seems overly simplistic to pin everything on animal protein consumption.
Of course, other factors matter. But diet is a significant factor we can control. Reducing animal protein intake is a simple step towards better health. It's not about completely eliminating animal products, but about finding a better balance. Small changes can lead to big improvements in our health and longevity.
Let's consider a historical perspective. Can you think of any past dietary trends that mirror this shift in thinking about animal protein?
Absolutely. Remember the low-fat craze of the 1980s and 1990s? It's a perfect example of how dietary advice can swing dramatically. Back then, fat was public and enemy number one. Everyone was buying low-fat everything, thinking it was the key to health. Now we know that was misguided.
That's not a fair comparison. The low-fat trend wasn't based on the same level of scientific evidence we have now. We're not talking about a fad diet.
But it was promoted by health experts and government agencies, just like the high-protein diets have been. In the 80s, fat was demonized as the cause of heart disease and obesity. We're seeing the same pattern now with animal protein. It's just history.
The difference is that the low-fat trend was largely driven by misinterpreted studies and food industry influence, not robust scientific consensus. We've learned a lot since then about how to conduct and interpret nutritional studies. This isn't the same situation at all.
And you're certain that's not happening now with protein? Remember, the food industry stands to gain from a shift towards plant-based proteins, too. There's big money in vegan and vegetarian products.
The evidence against excessive animal protein is much stronger. We're not saying eliminate it, just reduce it. This isn't about promoting one industry over another. It's about following the science. And the science is pointing towards the benefits of a more
plant-based diet. How did the low-fat trend affect public health? And what lessons can we learn from it?
The low-fat trend led to an increase in sugar and refined carbohydrate consumption as people replaced fat with these alternatives. Ironically, this may have contributed to the obesity epidemic. People thought they were eating healthier, but they were just swapping one problem for another. It's a cautionary tale about oversimplifying nutrition.
That's true. But it doesn't invalidate the current research on animal protein. We've learned to be more nuanced in our dietary recommendations. We're not saying all animal protein is bad, like they said all fat is bad. We're saying too much animal protein can be harmful, so let's find a balance. It's a much more sophisticated approach.
But aren't we at risk of making the same mistake? Demonizing one nutrient and potentially pushing people towards imbalanced diets? What if people start avoiding all animal products and end up with
nutrients? The key difference is that we're not suggesting eliminating animal protein, just moderating it and increasing plant-based proteins. It's about balance, not elimination. We're not creating a new boogeyman nutrient. We're promoting a more balanced approach.
Still, I worry about unintended consequences. What if people switch to processed plant-based meat alternatives that are high in sodium and additives? Not all plant-based foods are created equal, and some of these alternatives might not be as healthy as we think.
That's why education is crucial. We need to promote whole food, plant-based options, not just any plant-based alternative. It's about teaching people to make informed choices, not just blindly following a trend. We're advocating for a shift towards more fruits, vegetables, legumes, and whole grains, not just swapping burgers for veggie patties.
How can we ensure we don't repeat the mistakes of past dietary trends?
We need to be cautious about dramatic dietary shifts and consider the long-term implications. It's important to look at nutrition holistically, not just focus on single nutrients or food groups. We should encourage balanced diets based on whole foods rather than demonizing or glorifying specific foods or nutrients.
I agree. But we also need to be willing to update our understanding based on new evidence, which is what's happening with animal protein now. It's not about following trends, it's about following the science. And right now, the science is pointing towards the benefits of reducing animal protein intake for many people.
Looking ahead, how might this new understanding about animal protein affect our food systems and eating habits?
I foresee a gradual shift, but not a radical change. People won't suddenly abandon meat and dairy. Instead, we might see a trend towards smaller portion sizes and higher quality animal products. Think grass-fed beef instead of factory farmed or artisanal cheeses instead of processed ones. It's about quality over quantity.
I disagree. I think we're on the cusp of a major dietary revolution. Plant-based alternatives are improving rapidly, and as people become more aware of the health and environmental impacts, we'll see a dramatic reduction in animal product consumption. It's not just
That's overly optimistic.
Anymore.
Cultural and personal preferences for animal products are deeply ingrained, plus not everyone has access to or can afford a wide variety of plant-based proteins. We can't ignore the socioeconomic factors.
But as demand increases, prices for plant-based options will decrease. We're already seeing this happen. Plus, many plant proteins like beans and lentils are already cheaper than meat. It's not about expensive fake meats, it's about shifting towards more whole plant foods. This change is accessible to people across different income levels.
How might government policies and food industry practices change in response to this new understanding?
We might see some tweaks to dietary guidelines, but I doubt there will be drastic changes. The meat and dairy industries have significant political influence. Plus, there's the question of agricultural subsidies and rural economies that depend on animal agriculture. It's a complex issue that goes beyond just health concerns.
I think we'll see more policies promoting plant-based diets, possibly including tax incentives for plant-based products or limitations on animal agriculture. As the health and environmental benefits become clearer, governments will have to respond. We're already seeing this in some European countries.
That's a slippery slope. Government shouldn't be dictating people's dietary choices to that extent. It's one thing to provide guidelines, but tax incentives or limitations...
It's not about dictating choices, but about aligning policies with public health goals, just like we do with tobacco and alcohol. We tax cigarettes because of their health impacts. Why not do the same with foods that we know are harmful in excess? It's about creating incentives.
What about the impact
choices.
On healthcare? How might this shift in understanding affect medical practices?
I can see doctors becoming more nuanced in their protein recommendations, perhaps suggesting more fish and plant-based sources, but it won't be a one-size-fits-all approach. Different people have different nutritional needs based on age, activity level, and overall health. Personalized nutrition advice will be key. Personalized.
I think it'll go further than that. We might see food as medicine becoming more mainstream, with prescribed plant-based diets for managing chronic diseases. Imagine doctors writing prescriptions for cooking classes or veggie boxes. It's not as far-fetched as it sounds. Some healthcare systems are already experimenting with this approach.
That's a bit extreme. Diet is important, but it's not a panacea. We need to be careful not to oversell the benefits of any single dietary approach. There's a risk of people thinking they can eat.
It's not overselling when we have strong evidence. A shift towards plant-based eating could significantly reduce the burden of chronic diseases on our healthcare system. We're talking about potential savings of billions in healthcare costs. That's not extreme. It's just good
public health.
But
we need
to
consider individual needs. Some people might struggle to meet their nutritional needs on a predominantly plant-based diet. What about pregnant women, growing children, or athletes? We can't apply a one-size-fits-all approach to nutrition.
That's why education and personalized nutrition advice will be crucial as we make this transition. It's not about forcing everyone to be vegan overnight. It's about helping people understand how to get the nutrients they need from plant sources and how to balance their diets for optimal health. With proper guidance, most people can thrive on a more plant-based diet.
Thank you both for this lively discussion. It's clear that the debate around protein consumption and its impact on longevity is far from settled. As we've seen, it's a complex issue with implications for personal health, public policy, and our food systems. While there's growing evidence suggesting benefits to reducing animal protein intake, it's important to approach dietary changes thoughtfully and consider individual needs. As always, consulting with healthcare professionals for personalized advice is crucial. Thanks for tuning in to Listen To.